So if I wanted to begin designing bags and boxes for a brand, Louis Vuitton wants to work with Brian Sykes. They want to know how to develop packaging for the Year of the Dragon.
Most likely it wouldn't be Louis Vuitton getting in touch with me, but hey, that's great if they do.
Hey, they just might after this.
That's right. That's right. So I start with ChatGPT in conversation. So I started, we're working with the brand Louis Vuitton and helping them redesign a line of packaging in honor of the Chinese Year of the Dragon.
All right. We're going.
Awesome.
All right. So thanks so much for joining us today. We've got Brian Sykes, AI master. Brian, man, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, sir.
Awesome, man. I'm so thankful to have you on here. We've been talking on LinkedIn for, I don't know, like a year. It feels like forever, but
at least a year for sure.
Let's jump right in. Like, just give us a rundown who you are, what you've been doing, and kind of what you're up to now.
Okay. I'll try to give you the fast version. So I graduated from college with a degree in communications. Emphasis was commercial art. Within a few years after graduating, I launched my own business. I called it Sykes Design right out the gate, because I thought all I was going to do was just come in and do basic design work, you know, and you find out quickly when you're doing design work for people, the people that you're doing the work for haven't really got a clue what it is you're doing. You know, they're kind of like, yeah, just do this thing and move this thing, make the logo bigger, all that kind of stuff. So within a few months of launching the business, I'm like, okay, this is more than just me taking orders and doing design. I actually need to help these people kind of have some direction. So I changed the whole focus of the business to where I helped them understand design and advertising wasn't a band-aid. It's a part of a whole creative process. So I changed the name from Sykes Design to Ad Journey. And for the next 23 years, I ran a branding and marketing agency. December 2022, I had shut down Ad Journey. And the reason is because during that year in 2022, I saw some stuff about AI where you could type a prompt and get a visual. When I saw that, it really kind of blew my mind. And I said, okay, this is something that I need to understand. And so as I began exploring it and trying to figure out how to get started, what do you do with this stuff? What, you know, what's possible? There was not a lot of information out there showing other people how to do it. Like I had a bear of a time trying to even understand how to jump into Discord. My kids did it for gaming, but
right.
You know, what was this thing? So
yeah. Like, what's dad doing on Discord, right?
Right. So I thought there needs to be some educational thing out there for creative professionals to learn this next wave. You know, I did the desktop publishing era. Now we're going to look into how do we actually engage with generative AI. So I decided September 1st in 2022, to do a post a day, just basically teaching people how to use generative AI. And we looked at,
but you weren't an expert at this point, right? You're just learning and sharing.
Right. Yeah. Learning and sharing. Basically, I mean, I was probably a month ahead of everybody when I started. So I decided, let's start with the basics. Like, how do you even get on a Discord? You know, what is the composition of a prompt? By the end of September, I released my first book, AI Explore Prompt Fundamentals. And it sold over 1,000 copies, you know, and it's been from there. It's just the continuing evolution of watching the platforms evolve, jumping into every single beta I could get into and trying to turn around and show people, hey, this is this tool and here's how you use it. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. There's several other things that are at play, but you know, that's kind of the quick nutshell version of Brian.
15, 20 years ago, you were teaching a group of people who had never turned on a computer.
Right.
How to get into design, you know, being able to design with the latest application, the latest technology. Now, fast forward 20 years, you're doing the same thing again.
Yes.
Right. You're taking a group of designers that they know how to turn on a computer, they know how to use the apps and stuff, but now there's this new tech that's out there. And it's funny because like you're getting the same pushback in some areas where they're like, I don't know that I believe in AI. I don't know, you know, same thing. You know, the old strippers were like, I don't know that I need to do paste up. And I think paste up is it. You know, you'll never be able to do my job on the computer. Same thing. You'll never be able to design with AI. That's nuts, man. I mean, you're doing it. You've done it twice in your lifetime, which is amazing.
We watched, for those of us in my generation, we watched this transition, you know, from when you implemented desktop publishing into the system, it changed everything. In that community, you know, not just the layout design and how quickly you could do things and You know, I remember in college having to type papers on a typewriter, you know, and if you made a mistake, you could use whiteout for one spot. But if you got a paragraph, you start the whole thing over again.
Yeah.
You know, so being able to work from desktop publishing and typing copy alone, that's revolutionizes the whole speed of things. But then you begin thinking of technology disruption like desktop publishing. Well, it affects the printing industry. They were no longer doing photostat prints where they would take a camera, take a picture of it, turn that into a plate that they could produce. Now they could do it straight from digital, but that meant there was a cost associated with that development. So we had, you know, I had people from all walks in the design creative field who were coming in and like, okay, I'm suddenly, you know, I've ran a printing press for 20 years doing it this old way. Now I've got to figure out how to use Photoshop so I can make plates a whole new way. So it's kind of interesting to watch the gamut because I'm seeing that same conversation where a lot of people are like, you're right. This is just the way it's always done. We've got the equipment set up to work this way. We're already paying our fees to work with Adobe. You know, why learn generative AI now?
So then if we look, so if we look back, right, you're talking about like the photostat cameras. I mean, these cameras were huge, right? And we're talking $50, $60, $100,000 piece of equipment that you had not just to buy the equipment, you know, you had to lease it. So you've got people paying interest, making money. You've got the people that would come in and fix it on, you know, take care of it on a monthly basis. And, you know, there's fees according, you know, attached to that. When you eliminate that, you're eliminating almost an entire industry.
Yes.
When we look at like Adobe, and you're right, we're all paying Adobe and they're trying to incorporate AI into it. But is Adobe going to go the way of the photostat camera, or what's going to get replaced here?
I don't know that Adobe is going to be replaced. In fact, the course that I'm teaching right now is, you know, full immersion or integration of your generative AI tools with your standing desktop publication tools like, you know, Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator and InDesign. You still have a transition period. Whatever happens on the other side of this, you still are working with the original equipment. You know, much like those people who had the photostat machines, they didn't just overnight flip the switch and now we're doing everything digitally. You know, there was a process. And during that process, you have to have people who understand, how do I take this new file coming from a Photoshop or a PDF or whatever, turn that into something I can use with my existing equipment? So there's that transition period, which we're going to see a lot of that over the next several years. And, you know, the implementation of generative AI tool sets as a whole, they're not quite there yet. You know, you can, now you're just starting to get 40% of the time correct text when you use a Midjourney prompt, you know, put it quotation marks, I want this word to show up. But you don't have font control, you don't have font placement, you know, typography is limited. So you still need that next step that generative AI just can't provide. We have to use those desktop publishing tools. I think eventually a tool like Adobe, you know, their Adobe Express, I could see easily Photoshop and Express and some of these tools becoming more integrated with AI, where you create your concept and it feeds back a multi-layered result where you have typography that's in place that's editable, but they've already chosen the font set that would work well with this design based off the parameters you've chosen. It works with the font colors that you've chosen for your brand. I think all of that's going to happen, but it's going to take a little bit for us to get there. In the meantime, you know, I think it's important that we learn to use the tools that are existing and then this emerging technology that's happening. So that's kind of my thinking.
Ultimately, what I want to do is I want to get on here and I want to play around and some stuff and kind of get into the sandbox. But
I love
looking ahead and being like, this is, you know, calling your shot and be like, this is what's going to happen. And, you know, we can look back and be like, ah, I was right. Or I was a complete idiot. but if we look ahead with type, with anything, it almost seems like I'll be able to prompt the type of things that I want, the style, the way I want, the method that I want to communicate, maybe the multiple language that I want this developed in. And I don't necessarily need to pick a font. I think fonts will be gone because it'll just create something that evokes that feeling, which means typographers are going to be out, right? Unless you've got a library of fonts, photography, that's kind of out. I know, you know, Terry, who we both know, he's doing some amazing stuff in photography, but at some point, that'll all just be built in. So you won't go to somebody to develop an image for you. You'll be able to develop it yourself. If everybody's a great designer, then is there really great design?
That's a good question. You know, you look at the history of technological disruptions that's happened with the advent of photography, you know, we're on this side of that looking back. Mm. And so our perspective of what made a great photographer, you know, when you see Matthew Brady, who took the pictures of the Civil War, you look at Anne Leibovitz, you look at, you know, any of the great photographers through time. When photography first hit the field and became a viable tool, it replaced a lot of people's work initially. And that initial work was creating photorealistic, and I'm using that term, photorealistic images with painting. You could, now you could do it with a camera, and it changed the speed or the process. You know, I could take a picture with a camera, and it was so much faster than me sitting in a studio trying to, you know, create that image. But what happened is, just because you've impacted that segment of the market, it doesn't mean you've gotten rid of people who paint pictures. You end up with a whole different genre of image making that took place. You know, you've got Pablo Picasso, who comes along, who was trained in the School of Masters, learning how to create these, you know, extremely good photorealistic images. And then he developed a style and a personality of his own in his presentation. You know, you've got the whole impressionist movement that follows on the heels of photography that says, okay, well, a camera can do it perfectly. What can we do with a pen and a paintbrush that's different and more unique? That stands apart from what the camera does. And so I think we're going to see that same shift take place in regards to design. Just because a tool can do it quicker, faster, we won't use it in the same way. In other words, creating fonts and creating images, you know, those are still have a pertinent place to play, but the role might be different. It's functional, will take a different look and feel as we move forward. The definition of that is something we haven't necessarily seen as of yet.
Paintbrushes and canvas are available today for anybody. So anybody can paint.
Right.
It's not going to be a Picasso, right? It doesn't mean my neighbor's going to be a Picasso. It doesn't mean I'm going to be Picasso.
Right.
Yeah. So just because the tool is available to everybody doesn't mean that everybody's going to be able to do it the same way. So.
Right. And the same thing with the, you know, generative AI, learning how to communicate with it and expressing a vision. You know, story is becoming more and more pertinent as we move into this space. What is the story your visual is telling? Just because it's a really good looking image, if it doesn't move you from A to B in your storytelling element, then it's kind of just, it's eye candy with no purpose. You know, we're kind of inundated with eye candy at the moment.
That's kind of where we're at. Yeah. So, all right, man. So if we kind of like jump into AI, into this AI conversation,
sure.
What are the tools that you're working in today?
IDP Direct, pioneering factory direct sustainable luxury, packaging, logistics, and design. They're not just manufacturers, they're your partners in eco excellence. IDPDirect.com. If finding your spec data is a wild goose chase around your office, you've got a data problem. Specrite is the only cloud-based management specification solution that every brand needs. Because if you don't spec right, you'll spec wrong.
Well, I've got active on my desktop right now. I've got ChatGPT and Midjourney. Those are almost always open. I play with Leonardo. I look at DALL-E 3. I'm also using the video tools like Runway and Pika Labs. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm always exploring other platforms. I love what you can do with 11 Labs on the audio side. I love integrating some of these new tools that can be integrated into existing tools. Like I love the generative feel in Adobe Photoshop and playing with that, manipulating, you know, what you can do with that. The generative feel on Adobe Illustrator is not as great to me. I think it's one of those things that's kind of a neat start. It'll get there. But just kind of seeing what all is available so I can kind of point creatives to say, hey, take a look at this tool. I think this can be an asset. You'll hear every once in a while airplanes and helicopters fly over. I'm near an airport.
Dude, so am I. So so I'll hear that. I thought was, I'm like, oh man, is that me? But yeah. The Adobe Illustrator one isn't great. And the little, you know, the little window that kind of follows you around as you're working.
Yeah.
I hate that thing. I just shut that thing off. I was actually working in it this morning and I was like almost through my mouse on my screen. Cause like sometimes I'll be drawing with a pen tool. I'll be clicking around and then I'll click off.
Yeah.
Right. I'll click off of it just to like look at what I'm doing. Every time I click off, I always click below it, which is where that stupid window is. And it would be like, oh, it's going to change the point size. Or it's going to change. I'm like, no, I don't want anything to change. Just get out of my fucking way.
Yeah. You can change and lock that to a position on your screen if you like.
Yeah. But I was having issues this morning where it was like my Illustrator kept shutting down. So every time it would restart, then it wasn't locked. I'm like, God damn, I keep forgetting. but no, man. So I'd love to kind of like just share my screen here. And what I'd like to do is just like kind of go through your kind of workflow. Like let's kind of just talk through like how would you approach Louis Vuitton's packaging, right? You've got their bags, their boxes. So if I wanted to begin designing bags and boxes for a brand, like that's one thing. Now, if I want to make this relevant to a particular campaign where today it's, you know, everything they're building, you know, for China's Year of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Right. Which they've got some beautiful sculptures. They've got some paper ones and they all have like their own different style, but they all have some kind of connective tissue between all of them.
Right.
This hits your desk. Louis Vuitton wants to work with Brian Sykes. They want to know how to develop packaging for the Year of the Dragon. Now, typically you would go through the concept phase, the mood boarding, you would, there'd be strategy behind this, but we don't have time for all that stuff today. But all right. So like, what would be your first step?
Louis Vuitton is such an established brand. That gives us a heads up right away, but we can still utilize ChatGPT and conversation to begin framing, you know, some pertinent details that we want to use. So, you know, with a project like this, most likely it wouldn't be Louis Vuitton getting in touch with me, but hey, that's great if they do.
Hey, they just might after this.
That's right. So I start with ChatGPT and conversation. And, you know, my approach with this is we already have an established brand. So let's start in conversation with ChatGPT. You know, and the thing is, most of the stuff that you see regarding ChatGPT conversations is really bad. In other words, you don't start off by pretend I'm a professional, whatever, and write copy based off that. We want to treat this as though it's a human creative that's sitting beside us, and we want them who is extremely knowledgeable but extremely dumb at the same time. dumb in the sense of they don't know what we're trying to get from them. So we need to give them a framework. One way you could think of this is we're priming it for the information that we're trying to get from it. So we would start with, we're going to be working with a brand, Louis Vuitton.
I'm just going to, whenever I'm on screen typing, I'm the worst typist ever.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine.
Yeah. All right. So we're working with Louis Vuitton. One thing I've seen as well is like, I don't know, you can almost like compliment your way through certain things with ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. Like, To boost its, you know, its own belief in itself. It's like, oh, you're an amazing copywriter. You've been doing this for so many years. You've won these awards. And it's like, what the hell am I doing? Why am I talking to this machine this way? I've got to massage its ego.
Okay, so I've got ChatGPT pulled up and I can share my screen and we can work through it that way. So I started, we're working with the brand Louis Vuitton and helping them redesign a line of packaging in honor of the Chinese Year of the Dragon. So this kind of lets it know right away what I'm trying to do. So this sounds like an exciting project. Working with a theme like the Chinese Year of the Dragon offers a lot of creative possibilities. How can I assist you in this design process? Are you looking for ideas, illustrations, or specific design elements related to the Year of the Dragon theme? It's going to just start answering this for itself.
Yeah, before you start asking.
Part of this is going to be framing information in a way that's relevant to what we're trying to do. So like we want to be sure and incorporate the brand identity of Louis Vuitton while being culturally responsible with the dragon icon. What are some overlapping things we need to keep in mind? This is really good for us because, again, you got to think you're the creative director. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking to this person who's going to do person is ChatGPT, but we're talking to it in a way to get the most from it. So it begins laying out some things, you know, that's important. Yeah. Brand identity, cultural sensitivity with the dragon icon, combining elements, storytelling, legal and ethical considerations. So, again, all of this stuff comes into play. Mm-hmm.
And you're like pulling this out, right? You're not jumping right to the end. We're like, I need a box with a dragon on it. You're building up to that.
Yeah. And the reason is, so just because you can do it faster doesn't mean we're doing it better. You know, so I always want to start with the framework of where is this going? Mm-hmm. And then kind of creating the roadmap that's going to take me from where I'm at to what I'm looking for, what my end result is. You know, we can all get in a car and drive and get to the closest grocery store. But you can take that route a whole bunch of different ways. If you've lived there for a time, you know how to get from, you know, where you're at to your closest grocery store pretty quick. And if you're sending somebody directions, you're not going to run them all over town. In the same process, we want to approach this. We want to get there directly, but also we want to do it in a way that's going to be the most effective and efficient. So with this, we want to cover all the things that's important. You know, so it kind of tells us some stuff we already know. You know, iconic monogram. Yeah, I know that. Luxury and elegance. So this is really good to kind of think about, okay, so because this is something of relevance, how do we want to incorporate, you know, the dragon in our artwork? So this is something for us to be considering and then thinking about that. Like to go with this, just starting with point one, iconic monogram, luxury and elegance, you know, how do we incorporate the stylistic elements of the Louis Vuitton while bringing in the dragon and yet not cheesing it up or making it look cheap? You know, that's an important consideration. So that might be the next question. You know, I want to, you know, this is sort of like simple questions, but we want to have a conversation that's going to move us in where we're going with things. And this is really good because we could take this design idea. If we have a graphic designer to say, hey, here's the structure that we want to go with, minimalistics and abstract design. Great. And this is what's kind of fun. Is because we're going to prompt this with Midjourney, we can say, okay, minimalistic and abstract design. I'm going to let it keep typing, but I'm going to type on top of it. You know, who are some excellent designers and illustrators who best represent minimalistic and abstract design?
Sure.
It gives me some references. Now, with this, I don't say that what we should do is in Midjourney, you know, prompt and say, made in the style of Dieter Rams, Massimo Vagnelli, Milton Glaser, Paul Rand. You know, that's one way you can approach it, but it's also often a bad idea with Midjourney. And here's the reason why is even though Midjourney can represent certain styles of an artist, your representation is going to be limited. It's because when Midjourney is basically programmed to look at images, it's been presented with, you know, hundreds or thousands of images, and that the label is stamped on it. This is the style or the look. Now, if you've used the describe feature in Midjourney, you'll find that when you say describe and you drop in an image, it's going to give you four different variations. Yeah. And most of the time, those variations are all over the place. They're never on point perfectly. So a better approach is to literally jump in and break down, you know, what is the style? How would you describe the style of this particular artist? And that gives you a better framework because then you could say using this visual, you know, these cues, these words, because this is really what Midjourney is. It's a text-driven prompting. I want to take the way you describe that and apply it. So, for instance, Dieter Rams, using picturesque and colorful terms.
So what I love as I'm seeing you kind of type this stuff out is you've developed your methodology of how to communicate with this person, right, with ChatGPT. Because honestly, sometimes I feel dumb, right? When I'm sitting here typing in a chat, I'm like, I could just ask it for what I want, but it's a conversation. And I feel silly explaining this to people sometimes because they're like, no, you just say, make me a menu or make me whatever. And I'm like, no, that's not what you want. You want to, one, it's like you have a dialogue with it.
Yes.
Because you're trying to pull information from it. But two, you've got to be a part of this as well. And when I'm typing, I'm also thinking of like, where am I going? And I'm not like, give, you know, XYZ, give me a result. It's like, here's this. It might give me something back. I might fine tune it. And as I'm going through my head, I'm like, oh, maybe that's not what I want. Maybe I want to kind of change direction, or you're evolving the design as you're working. Cause it should be a conversation. Just like, you know, you and I are talking, you may say something and it triggers something else.
Right.
It can't be a, give me this cheeseburger and you get the cheeseburger. It's like, you need to be a part of that process.
Yeah. I mean, thinking about cheeseburgers alone, you know, around where I live, I've got Five Guys, I've got Freddy's Burgers, I've got McDonald's, you know, and several other fast food chains. And then there's a local steakhouse. Now, give me a burger has a lot of implication of choices that are going to come, you know, to the table. In the same way, we need to think that in regards to the design we're going after. You know, the more we give to the AI to come up with for us, it's not really coming up with this. Mm-hmm. It's actually looking at the mass collection of everything that's ever been fed into it. And it's basically making decisions based off of the common status. You know, it's not really reaching and coming up with something new and fresh. So when we are the driver, we can then impose our personality, our will, in the creation of something new and fresh and exciting. That's where we're going to get the best results.
Yeah.
So it gave us a really long breakdown, which is good. Form and structure, color palette, texture and details. These are all fantastic. What I want to tell it now is simplify this. Now, the reason I'm telling it to simplify is because the application will not just be inside of, you know, a ChatGPT. But working with it inside of this way, it allows us then to kind of go, okay, take all of that, compress it down, and then turn it to a visual. Now, DALL-E, its visuals are not usually as on point as what I like for, you know, a finished result, but it's a good starting point. Plus, we can see the prompt that it uses to create this image. Okay, so this is what it came up with. And, you know, as you know, we can go into inside of here and we can see, you know, the prompt that it created for this. Yeah. This is easy enough to copy, refine this, you know, and streamline it for ourselves for use inside of Midjourney or whatever application we want to work with. And the good thing also is, like, when we see something like this, we can say, this is great, but let's go with a pure black and white, or let's change this or whatever. You can keep that conversation going to refine it and go further. So this is a kind of a starting point and an approach that I would take inside of ChatGPT with a project like we're looking at. This doesn't give us, you know, I could take this file, go into Illustrator and have it trace the image. I could go into Midjourney and prompt and play around with it and come up with some other options. But this is just kind of starting, and we've only looked at Dieter Rams when it gave us a list, you know, of 10 other illustrators.
We're going to take this and then, let's say, put it on a bag and have, you know, have some general ideas of, like, where this can go on an actual pack. Would you then move to Midjourney, or you go through the same process in chat to get a sense of what the packaging, you know, how to describe the packaging?
Yeah, I mean, you could work in that direction. If Louis Vuitton's already got some established bags that they're using, and we don't necessarily want to change their whole bag structure. Their logo is consistent. They've got a branding element there. So finding a way to implement this, probably my step would be to refine the logo or the design for this dragon or variations of it, and then work with existing packaging. Like, you've got that mock-up with the Louis Vuitton bags. You could literally drop that into Photoshop, you know, place some of these images into it easily, and you've got some quick mock-ups of the design. So that'd probably be the approach that I would take with it. But it would depend, of course, on what kind of feedback I had from Louis Vuitton to begin with. You know, where do they want to go with this?
Right. And that's the part that we kind of forget, too, is, like, we're seeing all these images of AI. They're like finished images of a Lego pack for, you know, whatever product. There's been no Lego input in that process. It's just you and the machine, and then this is what it is. So, yeah, we kind of forget. It's like, all right, we'd go through, like, this stage. We'd have conversations with a client. You know, is this the right direction? You know, do you want to add this? Like, that push and pull that happens with the client. Then you'd go to the next step, you know, making those refinements to this element before it moves to the next step. And again, it's like, as an agency owner, you've been through this process, and we're seeing a lot of people that are jumping into AI and they're just, like, pushing it. Like, this is the way. But yeah, it's like, there's a million steps to get from a prompt to a pack or to a finished product.
Yeah. And that's why our knowledge coming into a space, you know, your background with packaging and such, you know, that's where the real strength of what we're doing has greater value and impact, because we know the things, you know, what are those steps and what is that conversation that needs to be had with ChatGPT or with Midjourney to get the results we're after. It is a knowledge-based system. It's not just text to result. It's literally understanding what text we need to use and the framework. If I were to talk to somebody, not a computer, but talk to a human being that's going to be creating something, I need the language that's going to communicate what I'm after. So our experience and our knowledge as designers, as creatives in different fields, that's what makes us unique and special in this space. The more head knowledge we have, the more impact we can have on that creative process to get the results that we're looking for.
Okay. So let's say we jumped a few different steps, right? And we wanted to put something into Midjourney. Let's say this icon is perfect. would you then take this, would you take this prompt and keep refining it in chat, or would you bring this into Midjourney to start refining there?
I've got a, once Midjourney released version 6, they changed its prompting structure significantly. And yeah. You can still work with the old prompts and you're going to get the old prompt results with a little bit more refinement. So kind of playing with what's possible inside of Midjourney. Now we're dealing with things that are going to be more specific. Like we wanted to define, you know, what is the image type? What's the subject? I'm kind of looking over here on my open version of Midjourney. You know, the color scheme, all of these things are pertinent to what we're trying to create. And so the more information that we're kind of feeding it, it's going to give us a better result. So like I could come up here and I'm seeing all these things of form and structure, color palette, texture and details. I could say, you know, this is great, but I want to break it down. And so from here, I could define what I'm looking for, image type, you know, and then kind of coming up with all the different elements that would be in play in this. Now, I want to take all of that, copy it, and send this to let ChatGPT do its thing.
Yeah.
And I can literally then go over into Midjourney, and I'm going to paste my prompt.
Okay.
So I'm going to let ChatGPT and DALL-E do its thing, and I'll refine this a little bit.
Okay. So then you're in chat. You're breaking this down with, like, you know, image type, subject, color, mood, composition, et cetera, to organize the information. You're not necessarily asking it to fill in the image type or that you're telling it, but you're breaking it down with, like, this prompt, this result, right? So like image type as a prompt would be Dieter-Rams, and subject as a prompt would be Dragon. It outputs this. It gives you its own prompt again of how it got there, because I'm sure it'll tweak it. But then you're taking that and putting that into Discord, into Midjourney.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you could share that, it'd be awesome.
I will pull that over here. I was playing around with Darth Vader tagging. So this is a rough, you know, I would spend a little more time getting this refined for what we're going to be going with, but this gives us a good framework for a visual representation of some things that we can kind of play with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we find things that we really like, kind of like this guy on the bottom left. That's pretty cool.
I was kind of digging the top left one. That guy's pretty sweet.
It is pretty cool. You know, the limitation with that, of course, is it's running off the page. And so with 5.2, I could take this and expand and zoom out and all that kind of stuff. And I'm limited with that. But I could actually take this image, number one, go into Photoshop and
expand it there.
Yeah, use generative fill. And then that becomes an easy element to kind of work with. So so this is kind of, since we're doing this as a multi process, I can go ahead and upscale both of those.
Yeah. So in the new 6, we're not you're not able to zoom out and scale and do all that stuff yet?
Not yet. So we're still locked to 5.2, and even 5.2, if you're in the alpha, you're not able to use that some of those features, like the where you can do basically, what is it called? It just left me for a second there. But in 5.2, we're able to select an image and then do vary region. But we can only do that inside the Discord. You can't do that in the alpha.midjourney.com yet. There is place where that's going to happen. Okay, so we've got this image here, and it's pretty good. You know, I like what's happening with that. Mm-hmm. So I could take and upscale it, subtle. And then we've also got this image, which is interesting, kind of clean. Mm-hmm. But we could easily go into Photoshop now with either of these images and begin working with them right away. So I'm going to let this first one kind of do its thing. And I'll open up Photoshop and we'll share that window.
Okay. So then the change from 5 to 6, I mean, it's a huge change. And then everything else that's happening on the alpha side is a big difference as well.
Yeah, I've been in 6 since it came out, but I do go back and forth. You'll see it says version 6.0 in the prompt. Yeah. So, you know, that's here. Yeah, for those who aren't familiar with how to get there, like if you don't have this set up, /settings, and you can see if it's available to you, it'll show up right here. If it's not, you're going to be in the default model 5.2.
Then we kind of go on mine, like, was it like 2 weeks ago? We bumped up to six.
Yeah.
I know on mine, I'd put it in the settings of six, and then every once in a while, I'd just get like 5.2 images. So I was just in my prompt, I'm like, all right, just V6. Like, you know.
Right. Yeah, you can do it in your settings here, and it'll override it every time. But, you know, it's nice, again, because of the being able to pan and zoom out and other things in 5.2. If I've got an image that I'm going to work with something like this, I probably will start there because you're going to get a much better read and render inside of Midjourney than Photoshop's going to create right now. It'll do some good stuff. It's kind of cool. We'll actually take a look at what it can create. It's almost finished uploading, and I'll go ahead and open up Photoshop. I don't know if this is the direction you wanted to take things on the exploration, but
would you ever blend images? For example, like take a Louis Vuitton shop bag that exists and this new dragon that's been created and merge them in Midjourney.
You can.
I've never had like the greatest results when I get super specific.
So whenever I'm trying to do a blend like that, it's more for, let's look at a couple different styles, you know, and see what it'll create that's going to be new and fresh, more than trying to get it to create a true mockup, because mockups inside of Midjourney when you're blending doesn't tend to work as well. If you've got a referenced image, though, like the Louis Vuitton bags or any kind of bag that you like, you can pull that in as a reference image and kind of use that as a base. Something cool you can do, and actually that might be kind of fun to play with. Let me share this back again. Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to go into my settings. Let's see, I'm already in settings up here. So I'm going to go to 5.2. Okay, so you know it's been a little more time trying to get this just right. But for now, this is great. You know, it just kind of gives us a mock-up really fast. And we can choose a design that we're kind of interested in. These are, instead of being consumer bags, they're more whatever. But this is kind of nice, the bottom left corner. So I'll take that one, upscale it. And because I'm in 5.2, then I got a couple things I can do that'll be fun. First, I'm going to grab this image, right click, and copy the link. Okay. And I'm going to come down here to this bag. And what I want to do is I'm going to do vary region. And we'll just go this. So you don't really need any of this past the question mark. So simplify this down. And I could actually describe this, you know, Year of the Dragon image. And go ahead and let it render out.
Okay. So then just what you did was you created the bag image. Then in 5.2, you're able to modify a specific section, and then it's basically a marquee tool like in Photoshop where you're just kind of creating a rectangle and you can shape it around wherever you want it to, and then the changes will happen within that space.
Yes.
Then in the prompt, it gives you the prompt window that you can fine tune. So in there, the first thing that you're putting is the link, and the link was, you know, you have the image lives on the web somewhere, and when you link that, it's so that it pulls that specific, it'll find its way to that image, and that's what you're bringing in, essentially. Yeah. So did you put the link to that image first at the top of the prompt or at the bottom of the prompt?
Typically, all of your links go in the lead or the beginning of your prompt. So in this case, you'll notice that this does not look exactly like the dragon we had it before. So it's only a representative image that it's kind of referencing as an idea to kind of get the concept. So it's taking that. And then because I told it, you're the dragon, you know, I just kind of defined it a little bit more. I could go into more detail with that, but really, this is what it was able to produce kind of easily. Just kind of working for that. You'll see these other images, like they don't even look like a dragon or there's elements, but it's totally missing it.
For anybody that's watching, like, you know, Brian, if you were to spend, all right, so if we wanted to get a hi-fi image that you would present to Louis Vuitton, what kind of time are we talking about?
You know, most of the conversation on the front side is would consume the biggest portion of that time, making sure I'm getting everything that they're looking for specifically. Once we get into this whole process, you know, we're fast forwarding the whole conversation with ChatGPT just to get to that one thing. So I probably spent a couple hours just playing with ChatGPT and refining to get the best description that's going to help me with that prompt. My rendered results, again, this is looking from, you know, really that's a low res looking image that's showing up inside of here. You know, it's not bad, but you can see it's grainy and whatever. And I can take this and bring it over into Magnific or Kreia or whatever and try to enhance the quality of the image. Better yet, though, would be that initial stock photograph of the Louis Vuitton bag that I could then go into Photoshop and drop in this graphic, and I could have a finished looking design in, you know, no time. With the result here, my next step that I bypassed in this is I would probably get my prompt and visual good and strong inside of Midjourney. When I've got that dragon image I liked, I would take it into Photoshop, clean it up, take it into Illustrator, vectorize it, and now I can take it back into Photoshop and drop it, you know, onto the bag for clean mockups. And it becomes a strong visual reference that can be scaled to any size I need because now it's an Illustrator file. So a good day's work.
From start to finish, something you would present to Louis Vuitton, you're talking, you know, 8-10 hours. And that's, and again, it's like when we're seeing all these amazing images online and people are jumping into Midjourney and they're like, my images don't look like that.
Right.
One, there's a heap, there's heaps of experience already, like even just building the prompt. And then there's the process, right? Like a lot of times, I know like Chris Branch over at like Artificial and Inspiration, like they, you know, he may do 100 of these Lego things and he's only releasing 5 or 6.
Right.
Right. So then people are feeling, oh my God, I can't achieve that level, that quantity. Like, how is he doing this so well? And it's like, well, you know, he's kind of done all these at the same time. And he's got a bank of, you know, hundreds of thousands.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of people that are posting daily are doing that.
Yeah.
Right? And we all kind of feel a little inadequate. We're like, oh my God, how the hell, you know, I can't get there.
Yeah. There's a lot that goes into it. You know, often I'll share my mishaps as much as I'll share my good stuff because I want to help people understand, you know, yeah, you can get some really cool results, but also you're going to have crazy things that'll happen. And actually sometimes I'll do an entire post where I'm doing nothing but talking about the problem that I have with the app. Because again, I think it's true. You know, those who are first jumping into Photoshop years ago when I was teaching, you know, what's possible with what you can do in Photoshop requires a lot of time and attention to learn those skills. But I can show you, you know, in 15 minutes how to totally upscale your game in Illustrator or Photoshop because I've spent so much time in it. Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do with generative AI is here's the fast track to get you some basic, you know, tools that you need. If you want to do a deep dive, I've actually got a course for that. I'll help you learn how to implement this and how to think through this entire process so that you can now, it's not just about speeding up, which it does. If I had to go hire an illustrator to create this illustration of the dragon, you know, that's a couple days of work. That's very meaningful and very quality driven. But if we're looking for a fast result, you know, I've been able to fast track that process. And it, again, for the illustrators, you don't have to throw away your skill set and say, well, shoot, there's no use for me. Actually, there's more use for you than you've ever known. You're just going to have to refine that process. A great example is Peter Moorbacher. Take a look at his work. He's on LinkedIn. He shares often on Midjourney. But he's an artist who's embraced the whole generative AI aspect, who was established and well-known in the creative community. And his name is one of the most used names as a prompt, because he actually gave David and the team at Midjourney access to all of his images to train Midjourney on. And then he uses that in his prompting and creation to launch to the next point. So he's found ways to utilize these tools to fast track his creative process.
So I want to kind of go back a couple steps here.
Yeah.
One. All right. So one, you've got a course on how to do this, right? Like this, this is not a course. This was just like a crash course, just chat back and forth. If you're interested in like how to even get to this point, then definitely follow Brian Sykes. I'll have links in the show notes. I'll have a link to the course. Definitely dig in and figure out like how to even get started and how to level up your design capabilities.
Right.
It's not coming. It's here. So you better get on it quickly. But I wanted to ask you for six, like how are you seeing this prompt order? Like when you're thinking of creating a prompt, like what's the steps?
Let me show you. I'll pull up one that's a little more in depth here. Okay. This is a version of how prompting can be different now inside of Midjourney version 6. And what you're seeing is a really deep down structure. So there's this option where it starts with, here's a basic overview of what this thing's all about.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the summary statement of what you're trying to create.
Yeah.
Then the next is a breakdown.
And it's not written, like something that you're sending to a machine, right? You've got of and the and as, and you're pretty descriptive. There's some storytelling there.
Yes. And that's actually where the whole move in generative AI is going, I believe, is because it's a text-driven machine. You're definitely dealing with tokenization and limits to how much you can put inside the prompt word-wise. But the structure of this allows me to frame, you know, specifically, this is what I'm looking for. And it understands the concept. So when I'm looking through this, you know, it starts with this long description that kind of leads. This is the overall what I'm trying to create. Yeah. Then I break
it down. It's like natural language.
Yeah. And then I break it down almost like I would give this to a designer or a photographer or a creative who's going to be handling this. You know, now give me the details. Photo type. It's conceptual art, possibly for a story or advertising with a strong narrative element. Subject. The central figure is an anthropomorphic deer with a rack of antlers symbolizing the hunter, which suggests a role reversal. Color scheme. You know, I'm breaking it down into each element so that it's not just here's what I'm trying to do. I could have stopped with this right here.
The story,
and probably been fine. But by breaking it down further and getting more specific, it's going to give me the results of what I'm after. And it's going to get much more on point. I've included color scheme, atmosphere, composition, lighting, and then, you know, the wrap up with your parameters are still in play, which is aspect ratio, style raw, stylized, all those things. So this is where I'm seeing Midjourney really move towards for creating more compelling visuals.
And then where in there are you telling it that you're looking for this photographic style versus like vector or painted or?
Well, as I'm going through this, one thing I've got is it's photo type, conceptual art. I'm telling it, you know, in there it's a photo type. And so, you know, that's kind of doing it. And also the details I'm using to describe the whole thing lets it know. Now, if I wanted it to be more an illustration kind of thing, I would probably lead with that illustration of, and then that would be the kind of point. You know, and then instead of photo type, I'd say illustration type. You know, so you just begin breaking it down to describing specifically what it is you're after.
And then, I appreciate you kind of sharing your screen and getting, you know, getting the behind the scenes with us on some of this stuff, man. All right, man. So you've done the agency thing for 20 plus years. You've done AI here for a couple of years now. So I'm assuming your agency continued to grow naturally, over time. And then this AI thing hit and like your agency has exploded, right? Like you're probably like doubling or tripling revenue of your agency with all this AI stuff.
Well, actually, I had a major bump in COVID with a loss of revenue of 80% through COVID.
Wow.
And, you know, that was with billables and receivables. And so I decided, you know, it's time to think about where I want to go next. And this coming year in 2024, I turned 50. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, where do I want to apply my energy and effort? And running an agency it's a lot of work, you know, and I enjoy it, but I also wanted to step back and say, okay, now what part of this do I really enjoy? And I love teaching. I love branding and marketing. It's my heartbeat. And I love being on the front end of technology. I've always been, you know, since the rollout of Adobe with the software and being the first group of people who really jumped into this application space and using it in college and then, you know, teaching it later. It's like there's so many of these things I enjoy. And I thought I want to really pull off some of the parts that I don't want to do anymore and focus on just those. And so the first step in that was when I decided that and closed down the agency, Adjourney is no longer in business. I don't do anything with it anymore. It's kind of like, okay, what do I want to do now? And I really just took a break from agency work as a whole and focused on the generative AI. I wanted to learn it. The reason I could learn it and have so much to teach is it's not just an hour a day. It's like sun up to sunset and past, learning how to use these things, you know, creating resource material. So, you know, my deep dives are days and days and days on end. So it's not just 365 days of learning. It's literally 365 days of learning in that first year where I'm invested every single day learning how to do some of these things and then turn around and show other people how to use them. So I launched, along with the five books that I produced, launched the AI Lab in October of last year, with a beta, and I brought on, had five people involved in that first beta. I have another, eight that's involved in the second beta. And what I'm doing with that was I'm walking through a creative process. We have three modules, and each module is multiple pieces of a project where I explain what kind of we did here, but on a deeper dive, like how to actually integrate generative AI into that creative workflow. The reason is, you know, as creatives, we find that I call it a dog trot. In North Carolina, you know, we got a lot of dogs running around, and a dog tends to favor a particular spot and runs that same spot every time. And it creates a spot where grass will not grow. They create a rut, they follow it. We as creatives do the same thing. We find a way to do something and we get stuck in that rut. We run through the exact same process when we're creating a logo or we're creating packaging or we're designing an illustration or writing copy. We do it because it worked. And then we kind of go, I'm just going to keep doing that. So what I've decided in teaching all these years is I wanted to approach creatives and help them learn the way they learn best, which is we've got to get them out of the rut. And I want to show them how to immerse themselves into the creative workflow with generative AI. And my approach removes you from that rut completely. By the time you finish up with the course, you're surprised with all the things that you're doing different, where you fully integrated generative AI into the workflow. Yeah. Not just, you know, it's this little side thing over here that you play with every once in a while, but it's actually a part of what you're doing.
Dude, that's awesome, man. Because you're right. Like, because I think when it's time to design packaging, man, I can either fast track it because I know I can follow this rut and just crush it. Or if I want to like really embrace it and I don't know, fulfill my own needs. Cause like when you dig into and you start creating, you start pulling, you start doing things, you know, there's like a couple different ways that you can achieve this. And one it's like speed. And then the other one is like, it's an art. But we don't always choose that artistic method. We just go with like what works for us the best. So I love that you've kind of created this whole new way that's shaken up the way that designers even approach their own process. It's January 2024. So what's the cost for this program?
So right now I've got two courses that are active. I'm going to be turning these into right now they're cohorts. So in other words, I work along with you with it. And they're 3 months for the level one, and it's basically 2 months for the AI for video, which is same kind of course material, but it's based off video creation. They're $1,500 each per seat, and it's a full deep dive immersion. That's with the cohort. Now I'm going to turn these into full, you know, self-serve, take it at your own pace. And I'm going to figure out the pricing for that, but that will not have the cohort element. It's basically, I've done all the work on the video. Yeah. You can follow it and you can do it yourself. But both of these platforms that I've worked on will create a certification for you once you've completed all the coursework, and your knowledge base is going to be just amplified beyond belief.
Crazy. Awesome, man. Brian, hey, I'm going to go ahead and let's wrap this up here.